we'll begin chapter 4, and at the end of chapter 3, Krishna, we didn't finish chapter 3, did we?
We just finished.
Huh? We did. That's right. So Krishna spoke of in quite a few places about knowledge, how in 41, how material desires or lust cover knowledge. And Krishna also said in 30, surrendering on all work unto me. In 26, ignorance, which is the lack of knowledge, darkness, is linked to attachment to matter. And then and Krishna has glorified the Karma Yoga as a means to get knowledge. So the fourth chapter is going to describe transcendental knowledge. And the first point is going to be how it is received. And Krishna's going to explain how Vivasvan, who was the root of the Kshatriya dynasty, how did he attain knowledge? And why he attained the knowledge was because he was a saintly king and he was meant to rule based on the principles of transcendental knowledge. So anyway, these first verses describe the process of getting transcendental knowledge. Because knowledge is so important. How can we act without knowledge? Unless one is on the very advanced spontaneous platform in Krishna consciousness, then one is just led by, practically speaking, his taste and by Krishna's inspiration. The Dhammi Buddhi Yogam Tam, he gives that Buddhi Yoga, that Bhakti. So how to get transcendental knowledge? So the fourth chapter begins. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, Krishna's going to explain the process of getting knowledge. And it's quite simple and obvious in a sense. If we want any kind of knowledge, we go to an authority, and therefore we go to a recognized school, a recognized university, and the person who is teaching the course, he has a degree, a PhD or an MA or something like that, which indicates that he's gone through the process of getting knowledge. So therefore, he's gotten knowledge from an authorized source, and that's what his degree is supposed to demonstrate, that he has a degree. And now he's distributing the knowledge that he has. He's an authorized person in an authorized institution. So we always go to authorities to gain knowledge. So that's what Krishna is going to describe here. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha. Imam vivas svateya yogam proktavam aham avyayam vivasvan manave praha manor ikshva kave abravit. The personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna said, I instructed, because obviously when you're dealing with eternal spiritual knowledge, it has to have an eternal perfect source. And that's the great difference between the knowledge that one gets in a mundane institution and spiritual knowledge. That the difference is in the source. Because with material knowledge, or how did the science of, or the practice of accounting come about? People gradually developed it over time. And it's still developing, probably, with new programs and new systems, because the information is getting more and more complex, and the need to analyze it is getting greater for one's survival, to analyze it instantly. So it's always developing. But the spiritual science has an eternal source, and it doesn't change. So that source of the knowledge is the most important point, and then the second most important point is the proper transmission of that knowledge. Because if it's properly transmitted, everyone repeats exactly in a realized way what they've heard, but the source is improper, then it's going to be the greatest problem. And on the other hand, if the source is proper and people don't transmit it properly, that's the second problem. So, imam vivasate yogam, proktavam aham avyayam, I instruct the proktavam aham avyayam, is imperishable, this eternal perfect science, I instructed it to vivaswan. And what is it? It is yoga, or the connection with the Supreme Lord. And then, vivaswan manave praha, manor ikshva kave abravit. So vivaswan, he spoke it to Manu, his son, and Manu to his son, Ikshvaku. Abravit means he spoke it, he said it. So here's the appropriate translation. Lord Krishna said, I instructed this imperishable science of yoga to the sun god Vivaswan, and Vivaswan instructed it to Manu, the father of mankind, and Manu in turn instructed it to Ikshvaku. So famous verses, all these verses are very famous. Purport. Herein we find the history of the Bhagavad Gita traced from a remote time when it was delivered to the royal order of all planets, beginning from the sun planet, from Vivaswan. The kings of all planets are especially meant for the protection of the inhabitants, and therefore the royal order should understand the science of Bhagavad Gita in order to be able to rule the citizens and protect them from material bondage to lust. Human life is meant for cultivation of spiritual knowledge, an eternal relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and the executive heads of all states and all planets are obliged to impart this lesson to citizens by education, culture, and devotion. So that's a nice division there. By education, the culture should support transcendental knowledge and devotion. So devotion is simultaneously the goal of transcendental knowledge, Krishna will describe later, and it is also the method of attaining it. Because there's the knowledge that comes with bhakti, jnanayat yasu vairagyam, it comes automatically through devotion, very quickly through devotion, jnanayat asu. In other words, the executive heads of state, of all states, are intended to spread the science of Krishna consciousness so that the people may take advantage of this great science and pursue a successful path utilizing the opportunity of the human form of life. So usually in the modern world, very often in modern world, education is separate from spiritual training. When you go to the university, they don't train you in any principles of spiritual life. And why? Because they think that has nothing to do with education, and that's in the realm of family, or that's in the realm of your free choice, or it's going to get in the way of the business of education. But it's completely separated. So you end up with people that are educated in a material way, but are empty in a spiritual way. So they're very powerful, powerful materially, but they're empty spiritually. That means their character is going to be empty too. And then on the other hand, when it's separated, the spiritual and the material education or education, then people also can become spiritual, they're very, very spiritual, but they're uneducated spiritually. Which means that their spirituality is going to be just a sentiment. and it's not going to be based on actual knowledge. And then you also see so much of nowadays that people, the religious people and the spiritually inclined people, very rare that you find someone who has any knowledge. And what to speak of knowledge about the kind of things Krishna discussed in the second chapter that were eternal. They also don't have knowledge about what the goal of knowledge is, what the purpose of knowledge is. And people will think that the goal even of spiritual knowledge is to enjoy materially. That's so prevalent today. Or even up to the level of to be peaceful is the goal of spiritual knowledge. That spiritual knowledge and spiritual practices serves your own peace. But it's not as if we were the center of things. That the purpose of spiritual knowledge is me and my peace. So previously Krishna is saying that he spoke this transcendental knowledge to Vivaswan, and Vivaswan spoke it to his son, Swayambhuva Manu, and then Manu Ikshaku. So for the purpose of the citizens getting some proper direction in their lives, so that they would use their human lives properly through culture, through knowledge, through education, culture, and devotion. And devotion permeated education and culture. So devotion wasn't separate. So what is culture? What's something that's a part of culture?
Ethics.
Yeah, ethics is a part of culture. What's right and wrong? What's another thing that's part of culture?
Literature and art.
Literature and art.
Music.
Music, dancing.
Dress.
Cooking. Mm. How you live, all the aspects of life. So all these things.
Values.
Yeah. And the way the interaction between people. So many elements of culture.
Social interaction.
Yeah. So these things should be organized, or were organized, or they always are organized to support what one values. So in previous times, these were all very spiritualized, and now they support a different kind of value, a material. Everything supports material values. So Prabhupada's purports here are quite long. I'm trying to give somewhat an overview. But Prabhupada does speak that the Bhagavad Gita must be accepted in the same way that it was taught by Krishna, that we don't add our own interpretation to it. We learn it through the process of disciplic succession. That comes in the next verse. Evam parampara prapto. So there's a disciplic succession that with the perfect knowledge is given originally by Krishna because he knows everything. And the second verse. Evam parampara praptam imam rajasyo vidu sakalaneha mahata yoganashta parantapa. Thus parampara, by disciplic succession, praptam, received by disciplic succession, Imam Rajarsyo Vidu, that it was given to the saintly kings in this way, perfectly, and then they understood it perfectly too. Sakala Neha Mahata, but in the course of time, this Mahata Yoga Nashta Parantapa, this great science was lost, it was scattered, Nashta. And therefore, Krishna's going to say in the next verse, therefore I'm explaining it again to you because it's been lost. I'm re-establishing the disciplic succession. So Prabhupada's translation of the second verse. This supreme science was thus received through the chain of disciplic succession. and the saintly kings understood it in that way. But in the course of time, the succession was broken, and therefore the science as it is appears to be lost. So this is just like the game that probably many of us or all of us played when we were children, that I tell something to you. Huh? Okay, we used to call it telephone. Chinese whispers. Yeah. So I tell it to you, and you tell it to Papa, or tell it to your mother, and then you tell it to me, and then I'm amazed because it's completely different from what I originally told you. It just happens that way. So it has to be transmitted very, very, very carefully. So one way to do it is that I speak to you and then you explain to me what you've heard. So at least our transmission is right. And then say, yes, that's correct, or I correct it. Or you have any questions about what I just told you? Is it like this? Is it like this? Is it like this? Do I understand it correctly? Yes, okay. Now you can transmit it. So this is the process of learning like that. And then when you pass it on to Prabhu over here, he said, okay, what is your understanding? And then he explains to you, or he asks any questions, and then when you're sure that he's understood the same thing that you've heard, then he's allowed to pass it on. So that's the system called Guru Parampara. But when it gets broken, what do? So the Supreme Lord himself takes the responsibility to reestablish the chain. Again. I remember there was one person who was this Western in the 60s. There was this Western Buddhistic philosopher, speculator who was studying the Upanishads. And he's a personalist in the Vedic system. He translated. No, someone else who westernized it. So when Prabhupada originally was publishing the Bhagavad Gita, he was published by Macmillan Company. And Macmillan Company, they asked if they could get some famous people to write some nice things about it to make it easier in the sales, to increase the sales. So they sent it to some famous poets and Allen Ginsberg. They sent it to Thomas Merton, who was a very famous religious leader at that time. And they sent it to a poet, another poet, Denise Levitov. And then they sent it also to this famous Buddhistic impersonalist. And most of the people, the devotees were surprised. They wrote back very, very nice things. And a lot of them were published in the original Bhagavad Gita. But this one Buddhist fellow, he was very upset with what Prabhupada had written. And he said that Prabhupada's saying that there should be no interpretations, that's his interpretation. But if you have knowledge, perfect knowledge, how is that an interpretation to say that don't change this? If I say to you, If I know something, I'm whispering my Chinese whisper to you, and I say, don't tell him something different. You just repeat what you said, and that way the message stays the same. So how would that be an interpretation? Of how else is it going to the knowledge be transmitted? If your teachers taught you something completely different from they learned in accounting, and then when you go and try to do your accounting, if they teach you 2 and 2 is 75, of course, they do that because it's too obvious. 2 and 2 is 75. Every time you get 2 and 2, you should write down 75. Because I like that number. Because I really believe that 75 is such a good number. I really feel it. from the bottom of my heart, fully sincerely, and I believe it, that 72 and 2 is 75. So therefore, when I say 2 and 2 is 4, and you say, oh, but I believe that 2 and 2 is 75. And you tell him that. And that fellow, when he goes to fill out his income tax returns, he's going to get into so much trouble. So Prabhupada explains here in his purport to the second verse. So Prabhupada said, so when he heard that that famous impersonalist was upset and wrote back in something angrily, he said, oh, let the demons become disturbed is good. And there's something true that said, some people will become disturbed. Because if you try to please everyone, and that's the standard of your success, that everyone likes what you say, then the people who have wrong ideas, and they also will like what you say, and then how will they learn? And how will the right people see the difference, the good, simple people see the difference between good and bad? So Papa was happy when he heard he was upset. He said that that's good, that it shows that the demons are disturbed. But it's such an obvious point. If you accept that the source is perfect. So Prabhupada says in his purport, it is clearly stated that the Bhagavad Gita was especially meant for the saintly kings because they were to execute its purpose in ruling over the citizens. Certainly Bhagavad Gita was never meant for the demonic persons who would dissipate its value for no one's benefit and would devise all types of interpretations according to their personal whims. As soon as the original purpose was scattered by the motives of the unscrupulous commentators, it means they have no values, there arose the need to reestablish the disciplic succession. 5,000 years ago, it was detected by the Lord himself that the disciplic succession was broken, and therefore he declared that the purpose of the Gita appeared to be lost. In the same way, at the present moment, also, there are so many editions of the Gita, especially in English. I think at one point there were 70 or 80 different editions of the Bhagavad Gita, and probably more now. But almost all of them are not according to the authorized disciplic succession. There are innumerable interpretations rendered by different mundane scholars, but almost all of them do not accept the personality, supreme personality of Godhead Krishna, although they make a good business on the words of Sri Krishna. The spirit is demonic, because demons do not believe in God, but simply enjoy the property of the Supreme. Since there is a great need of an edition of the Gita in English, as it is received by the Parampara, the disciplic succession system, an attempt is made herewith to fulfill this great want. Bhagavad Gita, accepted as it is a great boon to humanity, but if it is accepted as a treatise of philosophical speculation, it is simply a waste of time. Now, Krishna says that I'm explaining it to you for the same reason. Sa evayam maya ta te adya yoga prokta parantapa bhaktosi me sakacheti rahasyam etad uttamam. So, bhaktosi me, Krishna's going to explain why he explains this to Arjuna. Why did he pick Arjuna? So the verse says, that very ancient science of the relationship with the Supreme is today told by me to you, because you are my devotee as well as my friend. Bhakto sime sakacheti. You are my friend. So this is rahasya, or very, very secret. And not only it is rahasya, it's rahasya yetad uttamam. It is the transcendental or topmost secret. So one tells the secret. Like if you have, if you tell, if we're playing our Chinese whispers game and there was something actually very important, it wasn't a game. If you, you told them where you had buried this huge pile of treasures in that little town in Kenya. Is it a little town?
Not really.
Oh, big town, big city.
Kenya is a country.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that the city where that you live in?
Yeah,
it's big.
I mean,
you
said Argentina, Australia. That's on the side of Kenya, country.
Country, but I'm talking about the city.
Nairobi.
But you don't live in Nairobi, you live outside of Nairobi.
Nairobi is very small.
That's what I said. So I was talking about, say, if you had buried this huge treasure there, who are you going to tell where you buried it? Because you have to tell someone just in case something happens to you. Who do you tell? Do you just send out an email to the world? No. But you tell it to someone who you trust completely, who is very dear to you. So, because Krishna, because Arjuna, bhaktosi me sakacheti rahasyam etat uttamam, because you are my devotee and you are my sakha, my friend, therefore this very secret thing I will tell you, because you won't misuse it. So Prabhupada says in the purport, there are two classes of men, namely the devotees and the demons. The Lord selected Arjuna as the recipient of this great science owing to his being a devotee of the Lord. But for the demon, it is not possible to understand the great mysterious science. There are a number of editions of this great book of knowledge, and some of them have commentaries by the devotees, and some of them have commentaries by the demons. Commentation by the devotee is real, whereas that of the demons is useless. Arjuna accepts Sri Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and any commentary on the Gita following in the footsteps of Arjuna is real devotional service to the cause of this great science. The demonic, however, do not accept Lord Krishna as he is. Instead, they concoct something about Krishna and mislead general readers from the path of Krishna's instructions. Here is a warning about such misleading paths. Once you try to follow the disciplic succession from Arjuna and thus be benefited by this great science of Srimad Bhagavad Gita. Now Arjuna is going to ask a question. Because what did the first verse in this chapter say? This is about the transmission of knowledge. That Krishna spoke this science of the science of the Bhagavad Gita to the Vivasan so many thousands of years ago. But then Krishna was a contemporary of Arjuna's. So how is it possible that someone who is 125 years old or something like that spoke this science thousands and millions of years ago? So Arjuna said, the sun god Vivasvan is senior by birth to you. How am I to understand that in the beginning you instructed this science to him? So Prabhupada explains in his purport at the end, the devotees will always worship such authoritative statements of Krishna because they're always eager to know more and more about him. The atheists who consider Krishna an ordinary man may in this way come to know that Krishna is superhuman, that he is Satchitananda Vigraha, the eternal form of bliss and knowledge, that he is transcendental, and that he is above the domination of the modes of material nature, above the influence of time and space. A devotee of Krishna like Arjuna is undoubtedly above any misunderstanding of the transcendental position of Krishna. Arjuna's putting this question before the Lord is simply an attempt by the devotee to defy the atheist attitude of persons who consider Krishna to be an ordinary human being, subject to the modes of material nature. When you were growing up, did you hear about Krishna?
Yes.
Did you, when you were growing up?
Yes.
But you heard about it, of course, from the devotees.
Yes.
But you heard about it first from the family.
Yes. Well, no, I've been watching serials of Krishna.
So, yeah, and you? That's the movies on television, Ramayana on television.
And
Krishna. Yeah. By the same person, Ramanand Saga. But, even though he got most of what he wrote from them, he took advantage of Prabhupada's books to do the Krishna one. But there's no real putting forward that this boy who's dancing on the heads of Kaliya is actually the source of all in existence and the supreme personality of Godhead. So this is the point of the Bhagavad Gita, and people who don't like that fact, who are impersonalists, who say that we're all God, we're all the Supreme Lord, they can't accept Krishna's words when he himself says it, and Arjuna confirms it, and the other sages also confirm it. So anyway, Krishna answers Arjuna's question, because Arjuna was personally eager to hear more about Krishna, about he himself, and also he wanted to place these statements for the benefit of those who don't accept Krishna as the Supreme Lord. So Krishna answered the question, how is it possible for you to have spoken this to Vivaswan? And he said, many, many births both you and I have passed. I can remember all of them, but you cannot, O subduer of the enemy. So this is the transcendental knowledge about Krishna that's going to be described actually later in the Bhagavad Gita, a lot more knowledge specific about Krishna. But let's think that Krishna remembers all his births, and he's had the number of incarnations of the Lord. They're like the waves of the Ganga, there's so many of them, the waves of the river or the waves of an ocean. So how many births have we taken? We've taken also countless births, because if we're eternal souls, this will be described, it was already described in the second chapter and the third chapter, it will also be described in the 15th chapter, how we are following our desires. Wherever we desire, we end up taking a birth to fulfill those desires by the potency of the material energy. Adhisthaya manasthayam visha upasevate, according to what fills the mind when we leave this world, we take a birth, our next birth, fulfilling, running after fulfilling those desires, like a jumping from the tree, from one branch of the tree of material existence to the other, trying to eat the fruit of the tree. That will be described in chapter 15. That example will be given. But just imagine if we could remember all our births. So people often ask the question when they hear this, that why doesn't Krishna allow us to remember our births? Because then we believe it, that we're not our body, and it will be so much easier to just to surrender to him. So why doesn't he give us the facility to remember our births? What's your answer to that?
Pretty confusing. I mean, if I was a man last life and then life before I was a rat and now a woman and I had to figure out all that out and I can remember
that. That's sort of three. Just imagine 100,000 million.
Mm-hmm.
Different births, all crowding, and all the things that happened, the time that you were a rabbit and the dog caught you.
And all my anger about everybody and what they said to me.
And the dog was your brother in your previous life, and because he was your younger brother in the previous life, and you took away his toys, and he was really angry at you, and then you became a wabbit. And just imagine if all that was in your consciousness all at once. I mean, you could, you'd be so confusing. You wouldn't even be able to surf the internet. You'd be so confused. Or play a proper computer game. And then, but there's another point too. If you were remembering all your births, and not only all your births, just think of what the births aren't fun. We don't remember. But it's not fun to be born. We don't remember, but it's not fun. And then we die, and that's also not fun. So just imagine or consider that tens and tens and thousands and millions of births experiences and death experiences were in your consciousness all at once. Now what would you be thinking? And what to speak of the time you fought with this person and you got upset with this person and this person was so angry at you, he attacked you, and this person insulted you, and you lost all your money and you gained all your money. Now what would you be thinking if you could remember all those?
You'd have to be God to be able to think.
But what would, yes, but what would you be thinking if you had that in your consciousness?
Think about all the things that happened.
What would you be thinking? What would you be thinking about that? And what would you be thinking about?
Be shocked.
Okay, and then what? And then what would happen after you were shocked? What would you think?
What's the point of this?
Yeah. And then what would you think after that? Get me out.
Mm.
Right.
Help.
Get me out of here. So what would? So then you understood that Krishna could get you out. That you have a relationship with Krishna. So you'd approach him desiring what?
Liberation.
Liberation. Just get me out. That's all you could possibly think of, practically speaking. Is get me out of here. Tigers eating me. I mean, just imagine how it feels. To be eaten by a tiger because they don't first kill you. That's how they kill you. That's heavy, yeah? And how many times did you die of malaria and how many times everything. You were a fly and people went like this. Just imagine someone doing that to you. It was like squashing you. And there you are just minding your own business, being a fly. Yeah, the whole thing, fly thing. Swatting you. So all you could think is, let me get out of here. Get me out of here. Let me get out. And then I'll do anything to get out. I'll surrender. I'll do anything. I'll serve you. But it will all be about me getting out. So there'll be no question. And it will be motivated by fear of having to continue going through this. So there'll be no question of ever developing what?
Love
for Krishna, because the motivation would be too strong for liberation and fear. You wouldn't have a choice. So when we think that, oh, it would be so much easier if I could just experience myself as an eternal soul in some previous lives, so therefore I would believe it so easily. And then I would take it seriously. And the wise person has a different way of experiencing it. Someone who's very spiritually developed, he experiences it by hearing, and he just accepts the authority. So Krishna says, many, many births both you and I have passed. I can remember all of them. But you cannot, O subduer of the enemy. So even though you're the subduer of the enemy, your power is limited. Because you can't remember last life and the one before and the one before. There are a few people who remember parts of their last lives. There was one American general. He was quite famous and quite expert, too, powerful. He remembered that he had been a Kshatriya for many, many, many lives, and he was always against evil. That was his understanding. And he didn't mind keeping on taking births to fight. And to fight evil. So you cannot also do of the enemy. And then Krishna says, Ajopisam avyayatma bhutanam ishvaropisam prakritisam adhishtaya sambhavam yatmamaya. So Krishna is describing transcendental knowledge about his birth now. So first point is that he can remember everything and we cannot. So he's not an ordinary living entity, an ordinary person. And although I am unborn, and my transcendental body never deteriorates, and although I am the Lord of all living entities, so just think of what these things mean. Although I am on board, so the living entity is also, we're also on board, and my transcendental body never deteriorates, and although I am the Lord of all living entities, the living entity is not the Lord of all living entities, so we share some of the qualities that Krishna has, but not all of them. So even though I am unborn and my transcendental body never deteriorates, and even though I am the Lord of all living entities, I still appear in every millennium in my original transcendental form. So this is transcendental knowledge about Krishna, that although he is unborn, he still takes birth. So it sounds contradictory. How could the unborn take birth? So one needs devotion, devotional service, to actually realize this, because for a materialistic person, the unborn, obviously, using his own intelligence, would assume the unborn can never take birth, and in fact the unborn doesn't take birth, but he appears to take birth, just like, what's the example that we usually give?
The sun.
Yeah, the sun.
It appears to rise at dawn. It actually, the sun appears at that point.
It's always there. Yeah, it's always been there.
Yeah.
But it just gives us the facility to see him at a certain point in time. But the sun, because we're seeing it for the first time that day, doesn't mean it wasn't always there. So, another difference between Krishna and the living entity, he's the Lord of all living entities. We're not the Lord of all the living entities. And he appears, and the word is sambhavam yatmamaya, he appears by his own potency, by his internal energy. Sambhavam takes birth. Atma mayaya, by his own maya he takes his birth. We don't take birth, however, we're not born. I mean, did you choose to be born in Manila or no? Do you remember when you were filling out the form, they said, where would you like to take birth? And you say, either Manila or Baguio. I don't want to take birth in Perth. It's too boring.
Unless you take my birth next to Whiteman's
Park. Gaurav Singh for 4 hours. With politics. But we don't choose where we take our birth in that way. We're forced into a particular family, but that's not in a particular body, particular characteristics, particular mentality. We're forced by the laws of nature.
But wouldn't you say in a sense we do choose because...
But we're talking about the sense that we don't choose. The sense that we don't choose that particular family in that particular country in that particular body with those particular characteristics. In the sense that we follow our desires according to what we deserve. Because if we chose specifically, we probably would have chose differently. at least some characteristics would have been different, either taller or shorter or better being able to play the harmonium and sing better or stronger in this way, or curly hair or straight hair or shorter nose or stronger or healthier or something, so many things. And another family that was more wealthy, or a family that was whatever. So we don't choose these things. But Krishna, nothing, because he's the Supreme Lord, nothing and no one can force him to do anything. We're forced because we're tiny and insignificant and we're under the control of Krishna's energies. But what can force the Supreme Controller to do anything? So he takes his birth in a different way than we take our births. He takes his birth by his own potency, as he likes, where he likes. And it's very interesting that where does Krishna like to take his birth? When he comes personally, he comes in so many different forms. And he always remains the same, wherever he is, he's always the Supreme Lord, whether he takes his birth as a half lion, half man, as a boar, as a warrior, as a Parsaram, fish, tortoise. His consciousness is not restricted by his form. He's still the Supreme Lord because he takes his birth by his own potencies, and his potencies are under his control. We forget everything. When we take our birth, we don't remember anything. And when we're 2 years old, we don't even know how to drive our own bodies properly. We're just starting to learn how to drive our body. You know, left turn, right turn. You bump into things. You can't run in the beginning. So many things. So he takes his form. He takes his birth. And his form is transcendental. Why does he do this? So Krishna explains that in the next verse. In the seventh verse. I should save these for tomorrow. Next three verses. Any questions or comments?
I just have a question about what is the cowboy that's going on in Indonesia.
For what?
Killing of cows, the roaching of cows in Indonesia has come on especially from the news.
Oh, really?
So I mean, is that the best
thing? That's nothing new. Where do the cows come from?
Yeah.
Where do the cows come from? Huh? No, no. Of course they come from mother cows, but but where do they come from? Where do they? Are they come from other Indonesian cows, or because they used to ship them from Australia?
They ship from Australia, and that's why it's a big thing, because they ship from Australia and they torture them over there, and in Australia they kill them straight away. I mean,
they're kind to the cows because they kill them in a nicer way.
Yeah. So, but the question is that, is that torturing because of their karma, or is it? I mean, do they have to send there to be tortured for because of the karma that they have created in them?
Yeah, that must be something. Even Prabhupada said this, that the cow killers become the cows next time.
That's what my lesson, because I saw a picture in front of it.
Yeah. It's a heavy picture, isn't it? That picture. Striking. But that doesn't mean it's okay, because the person who does that, he becomes more and more entangled. The person who does that, the person who gets killed, he loses some karma, and the person who does it gains some karma. Terrible karma. And for one act like that, you gain enough karma that gives you, say, 1,000, 1,500, or 200,000 births or something from one terrible act. So, just, so since we've been engaged in this system of accruing karma for countless births, just imagine how big the bag is that we carry around, never ending, practically speaking. And then, because we have so much karma, if somehow or another we take a human birth, then it's such an opportunity to think, well, what is this all about? What is the purpose of my life? And we see that even for devotees, people who are attracted naturally to devotion, they all have different issues. Things that have blocked them in the past, that they have to resolve them to go onward. And then you go through that, and then, you know, and you go until you are stopped by something else, or you go until you reach the limit. Because life is meant to develop love for Krishna, love for Krishna. That's Krishna's gift, that he doesn't take us home even before we've fully developed our love for him. Because then we'd go somewhere that would be incomplete, something like that. So that's what the universe is. It's a field. The material world is a field really for the devotees, so that they can perfect their consciousness. And it's interesting. When you're older, you really start seeing the issues that in your life that were your issues, and that you've come to deal with and go beyond, that were blockades, so to speak, the things that are sort of driving you your whole life. And that have caused you to take birth in a particular circumstance, which caused that particular type of conditioning in you. And what did you do? What did you do in your previous life that caused you to take birth in Kenya? Did you know each other before you left from that city? So what is it that causes what that a son, because every parent doesn't do that, right? Send their, how old were you when you left? 13. Yeah, so something in the previous life caused you to get that type of an education. And also how you took it. Because other people, something like that happens to them, and they could take it in a terrible way. You know, feel rejected by their parents, and you know, get even with them be fighting getting even with them for their whole lives. But you didn't take it like that either. You know, you felt the relationship stronger, but it molded you to who you are today. Yes. And now your father wants you to come back. After 10 years. And how old was that little boy when he came?
19.
So he's 19 now, but when he first came, how old was he? Just 1 year. Okay. So different karma. Different activities in previous life. And he took it different from you, right? He got a little wild, maybe? Oh no, he was a little wild in Kenya, maybe?
Yeah, well, he was. I mean, after coming, he's matured up quite a lot more.
Do you have sisters too?
No,
just the two of you. Amazing that you parents did that. Anyway, it's interesting, isn't it? You know, and so you have birth in that family, and you know, out of also that thing with you know your parents are in England, and you couldn't go. So where did this come from? I mean, that didn't happen to you. It didn't happen to me in that way. It didn't happen to you. We all have different circumstances. So this is because we're forced according to our deeds, and your circumstances are quite different too. Completely, each one of us, and you too, and each one of us have completely different circumstances. Completely. He's one of 14 children. He's 13 brothers and sisters. Completely different. It's like a big football team. I guess it's crowded, growing up.
Yeah.
Crowded. But close.
Yeah, close.
And some you like, some you don't like. No fighting.
We are united, we are reunited.
Yeah, something from history. So all different circumstances. Completely different. Father Raman and I, we grew up in the water, actually, in saltwater fish. I also did. I was in the water more than I was outside of the water when I was growing up. It's different. But Krishna didn't do anything in his previous life that causes him to take birth the way he takes birth. It's all by his desire. So what causes him to take birth if he's not forced? The unlimited, all-powerful Lord. What caused him to take birth? So he's going to explain that in the next two verses. And then in the third verse, in the ninth verse, he'll say, the power of knowing this about Krishna is so great. If you just know his position and the nature of his birth, then you won't have to take birth. That's the value of transcendental knowledge. In truth, if you actually know it. So that we'll talk about tomorrow. Okay, we'll stop here. But just knowing that is so powerful. Because it will affect your consciousness if you really know it, accept it, and know it. And when did you move in the temple? How old were you?
2009.
So you're already grown up.
In the beginning of 2009.
So you lived in the temple for how long? 2 years? Or? While you were going to school. And your family wasn't there. So look who became your family, the devotees. It's a very close relationship with the devotees. And they fed you. Yeah? That was the most important thing.